Okay, so before we get started with tonight's call, I just really wanted to give a few quick reminders. Was that our, within Project Inspire, we constantly try to provide as many tools and ways to keep people involved in giving them Kiruv tips, Kiruv tools, and just, you know, Kiruv activity to do. So I just want to remind people that it's always a great thing to constantly look at the newsletter that we send out. If you have an email, we try sending out the newsletter every week. And in the newsletter, it's usually four sections, some type of inspiration for yourself. It's always good to be inspired on your own to keep yourself, give yourself the chizuk. Besides that, there's usually an easy Kiruv tool, a Kiruv link to a great video, a great article you could send out to someone you know. Simple and usually thought-provoking. Rabbi Samson, the director of Project Inspire, writes up Kiruv tools, which are also ways to discuss and ways to get involved in doing Kiruv. And also we give always a free audio download for people to listen to. Sometimes recently it was about Shavuos and about the Torah Shabbat Peh and the truth of Torah. But we try different ideas to constantly give people more inspiration and more education. So that's one thing I wanted just to remind everyone to keep their eyes on that, on the newsletter. And hopefully also within the coming few weeks we're really going to update it the way it's presented and all the information. Another thing is just a great source of inspiration for hundreds of people is the e-groups. Every time someone sends in a Kiruv activity or even just a Kiruv question to their group, if you have email, it's an amazing source of inspiration to others. On the groups can be in certain regions, hundreds of people who see these little acts of Kiruv and how they're slowly changing the world. It's an amazing. I'm on all 40 groups that we have, and I'm constantly reading the posts, and they're really inspiring to see what's happening. Then someone meets someone in the supermarket, and they start getting them learning partners in Torah. Some people just see someone just by email. They introduce themselves, and they're also getting people to learn and inviting people for Shabbos. It's great to see the small acts of Kiruv, and if you have the chance and you have the time, it's a chizuk for all, so please email in your Kiruv activity. Besides that, right now, the third thing I want to mention was that we are running a campaign, a specifically Shavuos campaign, to increase the amount of Torah learning, specifically among the Not Yet From, and it's called the Blueprint Campaign. We have a video, I think it's a 7-minute video called Blueprint, talking about how Torah inspires and the beauty of Torah and the insights of Torah, how it inspires even people who aren't religious. And the idea behind the Blueprint Campaign that we're running this Shavuos time is that you send out the email with the link to it, to Blueprint, and then over the next few days you call back the person or you email back the person that you've been in touch with and you ask them, you know, how do you like the video? So now that you see what Torah is like, would you like to learn a little bit? And on Kiruv.com we have so many great resources of ideas of things that you can learn. So it's really worth it just to take it and do it. I recently met someone on the plane coming back from Eretz Yisrael, a young guy, 25-year-old, who's not religious. And I've been in constant contact with him over since then, since January. And I recently emailed to him, and he liked it a lot. And hopefully it'll lead into something where I don't know if we'll be able to learn on a consistent basis, but even just one time, just to open his eyes to something about Yiddishkeit and to see what it's like. Hopefully it'll lead to that. And all it takes is just a quick email and a phone call. Also, it's amazing, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, the Chazal say that at the time of Matan Torah, all the neshamas that were around, all the Jewish neshamas were there. So these conference calls that we have, it reminds me of the same thing. Because we're sitting here, everyone in the comfort of their own home, and we have hundreds of people on a call who are listening to, specifically now, it's going to be inspiration and education about Torah, but it's people who don't, we don't see each other, and we're all here. It's amazing to be part of a group of people who are constantly growing in their own Yiddishkeit and in their avos Yisrael for others and are trying to inspire others. And that really leads me to really introducing Rav Daniel Koren. He is someone who I've known his family for many years, and he's just as a person, forgetting about his Kiruv, who he is as a Kiruv person, I think as a person, he inspires me a lot, and it's always great. And I'm lucky to be able to be in touch with him on a constant basis. It's a big chizuk. Someone who has gone has gained so much and grown so much in their Yiddishkeit, specifically through Kiryas and through Avos Yisrael. And he has made a roadmap of how he has grown and what he has done in his Kiryas, starting off from A to Z. And that's why the class tonight is called the Kiryas Steps of Hashad Yid. It's a simple Jew who took the time and effort to slowly build himself up and become what we might call a Kiryas professional. But it all came about just through the small baby steps that he's going to describe to us tonight. So I guess without further ado, Rav Daniel, the floor is all yours.
Okay, thank you so much. So welcome everyone. It's my second time speaking to the computer, and hoping that there are neshamas out there, like Shai just mentioned, that are actually listening. But I trust, Shai, that there are. First, I want to thank Shai, certainly, for all the amazing work that Shai does. The truth is that behind the scenes, are the people behind the scenes, I think we all know, are the ones that make everything happen, and without them, it's not going to happen. So we have a tremendous hakaras to Shai. Okay, so I'm going to try to really, what we're trying to do tonight, and I try to do this, is just take the past almost 4 years. I'm almost having the anniversary, a Kiryas anniversary, with my wife, and hopefully we won't have any interruptions from my end here, since everyone else is muted. I will, God willing, unmute maybe at some point, maybe in a half an hour or so, for questions, just to get any input. If someone is shy or is embarrassed or doesn't want to say something in public, they could also email me at dcoren, which is D as in Daniel, C-O-R-E-N, at h.com. So that's also an option. And what I did was I took the past 4 years and I tried to retroactively look back at all the different steps that I went through and how I'm able now to feel comfortable to reach out. And really my whole life, of course, is totally different, like Shai mentioned. And it really is all due to Bo Hashem. Without Hashem, nothing could happen, but it's really through the cure of involvement that me and my family have gone through. So I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to try to relate to everyone, like Shai said, a roadmap that I think every person, basically, who cares and wants to grow can actually take these steps, study them, review them, live them, and you will see that you will be able to feel confident to reach out really to any two that you meet, and you will see how much it will enhance your own Judaism. So let's begin with, maybe some of you have heard the story. It's been told in many different versions, so each time I say this story, even though it's my own story, I think I'd say it differently too, but that's okay, because it brings out a few points. So here I live in Muncie, New York, and the luscious meadows in Muncie, New York, a lot of grass, and what's interesting is that Hasidim come here, where I live is on the yeshiva of Rabbi Rudinsky's yeshiva. It's a little bit, it's at the end, the outskirts of Forche area, if anyone knows Muncie, New York. And basically, many times, and specifically 4 years ago, the Ger Hasidim came for a few weeks in the summer. This is their vacation. They actually feel like they're in the country. The imams, you know, they feel like they could, they see so much grass, you know, in Brooklyn, New York. I hope no one whines, but if you have 3 feet of grass, you're very, very chashuv. So in Muncie, there's a lot of grass. And actually, once in a while, you even see bears. So in any case, so here I am. I'm living with my family, my wife, I think, and we have 3 kids then. And the Ger Hasidim came for a Shabbos. They came for 3 weeks, and it was Shabbos Kodesh. It was extremely hot, extremely stormy, pouring rain. And that's normally what causes in Muncie, New York, the electricity to go out. So that's what happened. The electricity went out. And it was almost like 95 degrees or so in the actual building, in the yeshiva building. And what happened was the electricity came back on, but the air conditioning didn't. Now you have to imagine the scene, people wearing bekeshes and shtreimels, 95 degrees in the room, they're dripping, sweating, and no air conditioning. So certainly this is a case of pikuach nefesh. Anyone would be matir such a case. And they decided, okay, we got to send out one of the bochim, one of the young boys, to see if there's a non-Jew that could come and turn on the air conditioning. So they sent one of the bochim. I still remember who it is. This guy really doesn't know how famous he is, although I don't know his name anymore. But the amount of times I've said this story, the Ger Hasidim would plot if they knew but they would, you know, the schus they have. Anyway, so what happened was he went across the street. The yeshiva is across the street from a cul-de-sac, simple cul-de-sac, about three or four houses, and he heard there was a party going on. Again, it was Friday night, and he went to the second house. He knocked on the door. Someone opened the door, and when he knocked, he said, when the person opened the door, so this bacha said, can you please come and turn the air conditioning on for us? You know, the electricity went out. It came back on, but we don't have air conditioning. So the guy turned around and said, Avi, em rotzim shetadlik tamazgan, which translates in English to mean, Avi, they want you to turn on the air conditioner. So what happened? Obviously, this is a Jewish boy, an Israeli, and the bacha, of course, understood that this is not the right address. He said, thank you so much. We don't, you know, we can't really use your help. The person actually really wanted to help. His wife said, you can. There was an argument between him and his wife. So at the end of it was that the bracha came back, this Hasidic boy came back. I happened to be there. It's Friday night. He came back, and everyone was, of course, disappointed because he didn't bring with him a non-Jew. Just parenthetically, where I live, there's quite a few non-Jews because it's at the end of Forshe. So although I think everyone thinks Muncie is totally just from people, it's not, certainly where I live. So he comes back, this person, he tells us the story, and everyone chuckles and giggles the way most people do when they hear this story. You know, it's cute. Avi and Motim Shatadik Tam is gone. However, when I heard this story, initially maybe I chuckled too, but then something deep down inside of me totally, it was like an experience where I was just frozen. I started crying, and I was trying to think to myself, oh, what's going on? You know, this is okay. There's Avi across the street. What am I going crazy about? So here's really where my Kiyur journey began. And what I'm going to try to do is to take many different points and some stories, all that happened to me basically, and show you how the steps of Kiyur really lie in many things that I experienced. So although I have to tell you, I made, you know, when you don't have any Kiyur training, you don't have Project Inspire, you don't have people that are kind of giving you a roadmap, so you make all the mistakes. So I certainly made hundreds of mistakes, but Bo Hashem, I guess that was my job, to make many mistakes and then be able to actually write a roadmap. So here's what happened. Really, let's start with the following. The first question every person has to ask themselves, and certainly this is what I was going through, is why in the world should I get involved with Kiruv? Okay, so there's another Jew across the street. Why should I get involved? So, okay, so anyone who went to Kiyur training, this might be a little bit of a repetition, but it's kedai to understand certainly where emotionally it came from, and certainly some of the chiyuvim, which we'll soon see, are actually very much catalysts to be used to reach out. Okay, so here's what happened to me. I felt inside of me, wait a minute, there's a Jew across the street. Now, we all know that we're all brothers and sisters, or at least we say so. We say, Acheinu kol beis Yisrael. We call each other brothers. I sometimes jokingly say that the only one I ever really would hear someone, you know, say, brother was maybe Shlomo Karbach. But the truth is, even Yaakov Avinu, when he met the Roim, the shepherds, right, he said, Achai me'ayin atem. That's how he spoke to them. He spoke to them like brothers. We'll soon see that that's actually the best tool to use, when you want to reach out to someone, is that you have to really know that they're your brothers and your sisters. So I think the first thing that bothered me was, wait a minute, if this person is really my brother across the street, I mean this guy Avi, who I don't know and I never knew he even exists, then how is it that I'm not going across the street and saying, literally holding him, shaking him and saying, Avi, do you know what you're missing? You know what you're missing? I give a mashal to this. If someone has a sister or a brother, and suddenly, okay, you have a brother or sister, suddenly you discover that in the backyard one of your kids digs up and finds a treasure. And then you actually do some historical history and you find out that, in Muncie there used to be a tribe called the Muncians and they left a lot of treasures. And, yeah, in fact, your brother or your sister lives next door to you too and also actually has such a treasure, but they just don't know about it. And you, in the meantime, build a beautiful house, a pool, all the beautiful different staples of what a beautiful house is in Muncie. And your brother's like, wow, what's going on? And throughout the year, thank God things are going well. Finally, you tell him about it. 20 years later, by the way, the We found the treasure in the backyard, and you probably have one too. Can you imagine the reaction your brother or your sister would have? So this is kind of what I was thinking. I think in my heart is, come on, is he really my brother? Are we really looking at other Jews as your brothers and sisters? If you are, then I would not ignore this. So that was the first, I think, let's say, the emotional turmoil that was going inside of me. I didn't do anything. We'll soon see what happened. But that's the first thing that I think people have to, in their mind, start thinking. Again, really, the way to become a cure professional, like Shai said, although I clearly am not a cure professional, but to get comfortable in cure, yeah, I think you're going to have to use two things. Number one is the mind focus, and number two is the actions. We'll soon see how that works, okay? So number two, besides the fact that I was trying to figure out, okay, is this really, am I really treating this person like my brother? Number two, I felt that, you know what? If I really love Hashem so much, and I'm so into this Judaism thing, and Baruch Hashem, you know, I'm sitting, I'm teaching in Kollel, I'm giving shurim, I'm learning, I'm keeping Shabbos, my family, everything is wonderful, then if that's really true and I really love Hashem, how in the world am I not going and telling everyone about it? Now, granted, I don't think I knew at that time that this is actually the Rambam. The Rambam is one of the really the major sources of why every person really is obligated to do kiruv, is the fact that the Rambam says that if you love Hashem, part of loving Hashem is going and telling everyone about it. Whenever I speak to some people, I remind them, we say every single day, Ve'ahavta eis Hashem Elokecha. Although we use the wrong tune, that's not really the right tune. For some reason, we teach our kids the wrong tune. I tried to teach my kids the right tune, and they basically said, no, thank you, Dad. But in any case, we say every single day, you got to love Hashem. So if you really want to do that, and by the way, the Mishnah Berurah actually says that you cannot say, V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, unless you're really filling your heart with love. That's a scary statement, but as a firm person, I feel comfortable telling firm people that you're not fulfilling maybe the most important obligation, according to the Chovas HaLevavos, of all the mitzvahs, is Ahavat Hashem. So one of the ways of fulfilling that is going and telling everyone about Judaism. Yep, that's what it says in the Rambam in Mitzvah Gimel. You can check it out in the Sefer Mitzvah. So I was experiencing this from very much of an emotional turmoil. I was saying to myself, come on, am I so clear about Judaism? Am I so into this? If I am, come on, why am I not going and telling someone about it? Now, I think, before, you know, I would normally open up the floor, and I think I would get a few reactions. Just recently I was speaking in Brooklyn, and the immediate reaction that I got, there are quite immediate reactions. Anyone who's listening now is probably thinking to themselves, I know why you're not going across the street and saying hello to Avi. So the truth is, I always enjoy hearing comments, but I'm not going to open it up at this point. But if you actually have a comment, keep it, and I'd like to hear it later, or email me. That's an important point, because this is the crucial, I would say, huddle that everyone really is going to have to get over when it comes to kiruv. Now, another point, before we get to address some of these fears that I'm actually hinting to, there's another major point that I think I also went through my mind, because at the time, Uri Zal, Harav Uri Zal, actually came to the States, and, you know, he goes around fundraising for, why am I forgetting the organization? Levachim, thank you. And I was thinking to myself already about statistics. I didn't know the exact statistics in America, which now we know is around 5.2 million Jews in America, and really only about 10%, so you have about 500,000 from Jews, so it's about 1 to 10, 1 to 7. The ratio is scary. And according to numbers, it's 4/5 of Jewry might disappear within 20 years, chas v'shalom, if you don't do anything about it. So I certainly had those thoughts in my head, and I think it's important that everyone walks around with those thoughts. Certainly one of the sources that the Chavetz Chaim says, and it lingers in my head certainly when I have an opportunity, is the fact that there's a din of loy samud al dam roech, which means you can't stand by your brother's blood while it's basically your brother's bleeding, and do nothing about it. Although in American law, actually, interestingly enough, that's totally okay. You could sit by a pool and someone's drowning, and a person will not be obligated at all, according to the law, American law. But in Judaism, we say that that's ritzicha, that's murder. So Rav Noach Weinberg many times used to say that this is a silent holocaust. The Chavetz Chaim also seems to imply the same concept. So when we see another Jew, I think many times what would burn in me and kind of like would push me would be like, come on, Donnie, there's a Jew here, and he's getting on the bus and going to Auschwitz. You might never see this person again. Now, I'm not telling you that that always worked. I'm being all, with all honesty, but it's powerful. So I'm just throwing that idea in too, because I think that also plays a role in trying to move yourself. I think just parenthetically, an incredible words of Chizuk is the idea really when you compare it to the Holocaust. On one hand, it's dreadful and scary, and it's and really we don't feel it enough. That's for sure. I tell people, you know, I live in Muncie, New York. Next door to Muncie, New York, there's about 18,000 non-Muslim Jews in what's a place called New City. And I always imagine myself, if Chas V'Shalom, there were Jews being literally bombed, physically bombed, and being killed, who would not stop eating, skip breakfast, run to New City, grab a gun, and start, you know, doing whatever they can. So if we really saw it in this perspective, we would be different people. But okay, we're trying to do that. We're trying to do that. I once gave a speech, and I said after the speech, okay, is everyone ready to march into New City with me? And everyone laughed. But I guess if they would have said yes, or if we would have done it. But that's the truth. So on the one hand, it's very scary. On the other hand, there's an amazing statement, you know, Rav Noach Weinberg quoted from Rav Shach, Zichrono Livracha, that if one man killed 6 million Jews and one man can save 6 million Jews. So our ability, our potential to do something about this Holocaust is amazing. And that's really, I think, Project Inspire. You know, to be part of Project Inspire is just an amazing, just that alone, because I was just actually speaking to Rabbi Reisman, Shlita. He actually, when I spoke to him just recently, a few days ago, he said, you know, you guys are doing something that no one is doing. And this is really, so to speak, the last stage. So anyone who's listening, anyone who's involved, you're involved in something amazing. Okay, that's a little bit of the akadama to what I went through. And here is the next step. How exactly do you get started? Okay, so I think what you have to do is the following. You have to just analyze the challenges. So I mentioned a few challenges. I want to mention a few of them that I know of, that I was experiencing, and that I think many people were listening or experienced too. And again, this is, by the way, even if you are over some of these steps, it's important to understand the psychology behind it, because then you're able to help other people. So I found, of course, when just now when I spoke to in Brooklyn, I said, okay, so what's the problem? So the first reaction is basically people are scared, right? I was terrified too. That's why I'm a perfect person to speak on the phone about this topic. Why? Because I'm not the person who is so confident that I could just walk across the street and say, hi, would like to share with you something about Judaism. I was so terrified that it took me weeks just to get across the street, which is about 500 feet. And each time I would try an attempt to go across the street, my heart would pace faster and faster. And I remember that just one of the examples that I always say is that Friday night I was inspired about 9 p.m. I was preparing Pashas Vayetzchanan. I was laning the next morning. I got to the pasuk Shema Yisrael, and I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going across the street. That's it. I'm getting over this fear. I'm going to do it. You just got to do it. And I went across the street, and as I got closer to the house, I was getting more and more scared. My heart was beating faster and faster. And by the time I got to the house, I knocked on the door, and I heard some noise, and I got so petrified that I ran. That's all I did. I ran back home. I had visions of someone coming out, Avi coming out with a machete or an Uzi, and gunning me down for having the chutzpah to come out and even try and attempt to say hello. So that was really one of my first attempts in cues. Anyone who thinks they're scared and therefore they can't do kiruv, I'm being mechayev you to do so, because I got over it. Okay, like the Gemara says, in Yoyim Mechil, mechayev es aniyim. So I'm also being mechayev anyone that wants to do, that thinks they can't do kiruv. Let's take this a little bit further. The being scared, what is this really, why are we so scared? So it's really what we call social insecurities. I would call it the lack of social skills that unfortunately this generation has. I would give an example for someone to say hello today. You know, you're walking in the street and someone says hello, or you say hello to someone, they look at you like, do I know you? Because it's odd. What do you mean you're saying hello to me? And even out of state, you know, these are the out of town, out of New York, yeah, people are so nice. It's true. It's much more relaxed atmosphere. But even there, I was once walking in Chicago, and I said, good Shabbos to someone. And the person said, do I know you? And I said, no, but isn't it, you know, it's out of town. Don't you say hello, and you, even to strangers? So the person said, yeah, you're right, but many New Yorkers have come to Chicago, and therefore they ruined us. So it already gave me an idea that, look, it's spreading. There's a problem. We lost the social abilities. And therefore, here's the most amazing thing about Kiruv, which helped me personally, is the ability to just work in our social skills again, saying hello. We'll soon discuss a little bit more of being happy, smiley, etc. So I certainly, when someone says I'm not cut out for this, you should know that I'm extremely sensitive and insecure, and nevertheless, I pushed myself to do this. Okay, so we'll soon discuss how to get over that. Certainly, it's a valid fear, and we're not ignoring it, but we're going to discuss how to distill it and get rid of it, because I did. And number two, I'm just going to enumerate some of the fears that exist. Number two is that people say, I have no idea how to do Kiruv. Right? Even if I was able to walk across the street, and which I did eventually, and I eventually got to the door, and eventually I came at a time during the day, and finally the wife opened up the door, and she said the scariest word that anyone wants to hear when they open and knock on some stranger's door is, can I help you? And of course, I kind of froze because I didn't really prepare anything. All I know is I got to get across the street. Fine, I got across the street. She opened the door. Now what? So I a little bit was babbling, and then I said something like, well, I'm your neighbor, and I wanted to say hello. And she said, hello. And then I froze, and I was like, well, you know, I teach bar mitzvah lessons. And she said, okay, great. Let me take down your number. Wow, I was so proud of myself. Hey, she's taking down my number. And, of course, she didn't call me back. So that's the first lesson in Kiruv, is that you don't let them take down your number. You exchange numbers. Otherwise, you probably will not get a call back. We'll soon fast forward. Baruch Hashem, this family we're very close with, and we made a bat mitzvah for their son, and my wife is now teaching the daughter for a bat mitzvah lesson. So it's still a journey ahead, but it's just to tell you and to show you that things can happen, even if the first few times you totally messed up. So here I am. So here's another idea. People say, I don't know how to do cures. Okay, that's another challenge. We'll discuss each one in a moment. Number three, I think this is it gets a little bit more firm. Some people will tell you, even if you, the listener here on tonight, is probably, Baruch Hashem, understanding how important this mitzvah is, many people will say, look, I could be learning. I could, a little bit more classical is when people say, I could be mekarv myself. I need to be mekarv myself first. That's really the most common line that I get from people sometimes when they say, you ready to do kiruv? And they'll say, I got to be mekarv myself first. So I will respond to that in a moment in a little bit of a comical way. And number four, people will say the following. They will ask me something I don't know. Right? I think everyone in this, I'm assuming everyone has a little bit of that fear that they're going to ask me something that I don't know the answer to. And very valid. Number five, people are scared of rejections. From a firm point of view, people will tell me, I'll make it things worse. You don't want me to get involved in Kiruv. Forget about that. Because I'll just be, some people always say, I'm not only not Mekarv Rechokim, I'm Merache Krovim. So we'll discuss that too. And number six, should we not be concerned with Kiruv Krovim, right? People will say, what are you doing Kiruv Rechokim? What about Kiruv Krovim? Isn't that something that comes first? So we have to deal with that too. And last one, it might be a bad influence on my family. People are certainly scared. And if we're going to invite people over and my kids are going to see what other Jews, so to speak, are not properly doing, so they might be influenced. So here I call this like the seven fears that most people have, and I think I probably had some of these fears too. I don't think I had all of them, but they're important to address. And when we address them, you'll learn a lot about how you could step into the world of Kiruv. Okay, so here goes the beginning. Every Kiruv opportunity normally is going to be blocked by an incredible fear. I call it actually the stomach feeling, and I think people appreciate it because most people, if you're normal, when there's a Kiruv opportunity, your stomach starts feeling sick and you're like, ugh, get me out of here. I don't want to do this. So how do you get rid of that? So I tell people like this. beautiful. It's so nice that we're coming up to the holiday of Shavuos, and the Vilna Gaon says on the pasuk Vatera ki misametzes hi laleches imah. An amazing pasuk. It says that Naomi saw that Ruth was really misametzes. Now misametzes can be translated in many ways. So the most classical way misametzes means that she was trying really hard. She was trying really hard to come. She really wanted to come and join Naomi. But the Vilna Gaon, Zichrono Livracha, says that misametzes means that she was struggling. And she was struggling so much that Naomi said this must be the right thing. What do we learn from this Vilna Gaon? Maybe the most important point in getting your over the huddle of Kiruv, and that is, if you're nervous, you have that stomach feeling, you should know that this is the best sign. And the Vilna Gaon says, a rule of thumb from here, amazing, he doesn't speak about Kiruv only, he says, any time you're not sure if to do something, you're just not sure, is it the right thing to do, not the right thing to do, if you're having a struggle, you should know that that's a good sign, because if it's no struggle, the Yetzer is a trick here, there's a trap. So I use this, by the way, all the time. I mean, I could give you, hopefully, many examples, but just recently I was in a pizza shop, and maybe this is most common. We'll soon try to use some common scenarios. But I was in a pizza shop. I'm minding my own business. I'm eating. It was in Bar Park, right next to Maimonides. I had an appointment with a voice trainer. So anyway, so I'm there, sitting, eating my pizza, lunchtime, and I overhear a conversation between an old lady. She must have been, I think, 96 years old, you know, very loud and clear, and sharing with everyone, because everyone in the store basically was hearing what she was saying, and she was sitting there with her daughter and her nurse. And I don't know if she was Jewish or not, although it is a kosher pizza shop, it could very likely it is, but there are non-Jews that come there from the hospital. In any case, she's telling the whole story about how her 96th birthday, they invited other people. It's a little bit comical. She said how she invited so many people and no one RSVP'd. And then two days before, she called people up to find out why is no one RSVPing, and they said that at this age, we don't RSVP until about 24 hours before because we don't know if we're going to really make it. So that was cute. But in any case, so what happened was she mentioned once the word Jewish. She did. But in any case, look, it's a 96-year-old lady. I ask everyone on the phone right now, what would you do? What can you do? You're in a pizza shop. What are you going to do? And how are you going to make care of a 96-year-old lady, right? Sounds a little bit impossible. So the truth is, I finished my pizza. I got up to go, and there it was. My stomach started churning, and that feeling of, okay, come on, big shot. You're the Kiruv trainer. You're the one that teaches Kiruv training. What are you going to do? Just going to walk out of the pizza store? And I tell you, everyone is going to experience that. Once you get involved in Kiruv, first of all, suddenly you have all these opportunities that Hashem sends you, and it's a present. And you got to know how, and you're going to have that stomach feeling. So it happens to be I said, oh, come on, Hashem, leave me alone. I want to go. And that's normal. You should know that's totally normal. But once I have that sign, I say, okay, something's good going to happen from this, because the alternative is you're going to do nothing, and then you're going to regret it for the rest of the day. So I would say that's really an easy way to tip and push you to do it, is because you're going to regret not doing it. And the regret of not doing it is going to be more painful than actually doing it, okay? So here I am. I'm going to this lady. I was like, what am I going to do? I have to happen to have it in my knapsack. This is one of the best tools. We'll discuss it a little bit later. I have a few Aish cards. So Aish cards are very important. We call them tools. And they're perfect for this type of setting where you're not going to see a person for very long. And you want to give someone something. So I had one of the Aish cards on brachas. That means the different blessings that you can make in different foods and fruits. That actually is one of my favorite. Everyone has their own favorite tool. So here I am. I'm going next to two tables up. I'm totally embarrassed, but I sit down and I say, please, I hope you don't mind. I was over-listening into your conversation. It was a little difficult not to. And then the lady actually was like, you know, reaction was, oh, that's so nice. You know, very, very, very receptive. And then I said, you know, I want to share with you something. You mentioned the old age. And I told her, you know, there's a beautiful statement in the Talmud that speaks about why people actually live for a long time. It's a Gemara in Maseches Megillah. Okay, it happened. That's the thought that came to my head. So she actually said to me, oh, I would take things with a stride. She was giving a good explanation. I take things with a stride, and I never really got upset. Beautiful. So even though I cheated on my diet and I had a lot of coffee, I lived to 96. Beautiful. So I told her, I want to share with you something. It's called the Pleasure Principle. And I showed her a card on blessings, on making blessings, a card that I had. It's a beautiful card. It folds up. And she's like, oh, what is this? And I said, you know, I tried to explain to her the blessings you make in different foods. And she said the most amazing statement that literally moved me forward in my queue of understanding, like miles and miles ahead, because she said the following statement. So be prepared for such statements. She said, oh, in a very high-pitched voice, that is the archaic custom that the Jewish people had in the desert. And I was like, what? I was like totally shocked. Like the first time I ever saw someone actually really say and look at Judaism as some ancient archaic customs of making blessings on food that has nothing to do with today. Now, of course, thank God, it gave me a great opportunity. I said, well, actually, no, it's all about being aware of all the beautiful gifts that God has given us, and therefore it actually keeps you, your mind really happy, etc. And she was very moved by it, very touched. And the truth is, I was trying to think to myself, okay, new big shot, how are you going to continue? I'm speaking to myself, of course. What else are you going to do? So you shared with her a nice idea. What else are you going to leave it with? Because I had to go. So I said to myself, look, on the bottom of the card, it says H.com. So I actually asked her, I said, and you could do this with any someone who's most, even old people today, although they may not be walking around with three Blackberries and an MP3 attached to the ears, but they very likely do come in contact with a computer. So I actually asked her if she has a computer. She said no, but her daughter immediately, who obviously was actually being moved, and I was kind of ignoring her actually, she actually said, oh yeah, we could go to the library and look it up. So, Baruch Hashem, I think it was a success with the daughter, and again, a 96-year-old lady did not put on a shetel and make blessings at the pizza shop. But Baruch Hashem, it was an inspiration, and certainly it inspired her daughter. So I don't even know the rest of the story. But that is the perfect example. I'm only bringing this at this point is just to show you that those feelings, the stomach, is something you could actually use it to know that this is really the right thing to do. Okay, wow, time flies. Let me just actually go for another 5 more minutes. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the floor for any comments or questions. So the next step really is to understand that if you really want, I call this really, it's like the three-step rule. If you want to get going in reaching out, so use this example that I just gave of you meeting someone in a pizza shop. It's a very common situation. Or you're at the mall or whatever the situation is, you're meeting someone, so you're having those feelings. So now you know you're going to remember the Vilna Gaon or Rabbi Cohen told you the Vilna Gaon. It's a good sign. This is what you have to do. The next step I always tell people is even if that, you're going to have a struggle. It may not get you going. But the next step is you got to daven to Hashem. You got to daven to Hashem. You can't do anything without davening to Hashem. And therefore, if you start davening, you're going to be successful. And I add one more step for this, and that is, even after you had those feelings and you davened to Hashem, you may still be second-guessing yourself, should I do it, should I not? Think to yourself, what is the worst thing that could happen? What is the worst thing that could happen? Would this lady take a pizza and put it in my face and say, don't ever listen in? Maybe, but unlikely that that's going to happen. Not only that, Eish HaTorah, I heard this from Rav Noach Weinberg Zichrono Livracha when he came to Yeshiva actually to speak. He said that Eish HaTorah gives about, I think it's something like $100 or maybe $500, I don't remember the numbers, for anyone who gets hit when trying to do kiruv. So if you try to go over someone and say, I would like to share with you something about blessings, and they say, how dare you, and they knock you out, you can get a lot of money from Eish HaTorah. So I said that jokingly, but the truth is those are the three things that actually work. Think to yourself, what's the worst that can happen? When you have these three things, I add maybe one more point that I mentioned before, and that is that you're going to regret not doing it. You're going to regret it, and it's going to be more painful, so you might as well try. And therefore, this is really the methodology that I use until today. You should know, even after 4 years where I feel confident, and I can reach out, and I know a little bit much more what to say, I always look for that feeling, because if I don't have that feeling, then there's something wrong. So that's important to be aware of. Okay, Let me just mention the one more point, and then I'm going to actually take some questions. God willing, since we are running out of time, what we're going to do is, Bezat Hashem, if people are interested, we're going to have a second session just to complete this, God willing. Normally when I say stories, it does take more, but each story really is there for a purpose because each story really kicks, you know, there's nothing more powerful than a story when it shows you vividly that you can do what seems to be difficult and impossible. It can be done. So I'm just personally actually putting in everyone's mind, if everyone wants to remember this on the calendar, we will probably shoot for, I think, the Tuesday, like in 3 weeks or so, June 16th. Tuesday night, June 16th. I think Shai Markowitz will be in charge of sending out the information on that. Okay, so what I'm going to just do it now is to share with you one point, which I think is extremely important. I mentioned that one of the problems that people say why they don't want to reach out is because not only are they not going to be mekarv the person, they're going to be merachek the person, and the chas v'shalom going to cause a chilul Hashem. And who would want that on their plate, right? So I say the following. If you follow what I just said, which is you followed your feelings, you know this is the right thing to do, you daven to Hashem, and you got, and you use the, you know, the trick of what the worst can happen, there, it's impossible that something bad can happen. Even if something looks like the result is not good, it is only good. Impossible. Chazal say, machshava teva kadosh baruch hu metal for the maise, which means a good thought God considers an action, which means if you're thinking to do the right thing, I guarantee you, I'm willing to guarantee you that something good is going to happen. Whether it's for your benefit, your development, which certainly is going to be good because you tried, and we'll soon discuss that, God willing, in the future, why that's so important. But more than that is that even when it looks like the person felt rejected, annoyed, etc., it's going to bring to good. And I'm just going to share with you one powerful story. I have two stories, actually, but one powerful story that I saw actually by Gil Locks. I don't know if you know Gil Locks, but Gil Locks is going to be a big tzaddik in the old city, Ir Atika, and he wrote a book, very fascinating book. He actually used to be the guru of Central Park. He was in the New York Times. He used to meditate for 22 hours, fascinating person. He wrote a whole book about himself, so it's okay to share this information. And eventually it became about tshuva. But one of his fascinations that he had actually was mezuzah, which we'll discuss. People simply telling people, hey, well, why don't you put up a mezuzah on your door? Easy. God willing, when we speak again, I'll tell you how we made a mezuzah party for the family across the street. A very nice, easy thing to do, as long as you know how to knock in nails, and if not, your wife will help you. But in any case, so this person, Gilalax, is describing the following case. There's a Chabad boy. He goes over to an elderly man and he says, would you like to put on stone? Which, of course, by Chabad children, that's not a big deal. And this person turns to the Chabad boy and says, how dare you? He starts cursing him out. Just get out of here. Don't even ask me in a million years to put on stone. Blah, 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 blah. Fine. The young boy is not, I don't think he's, you know, deterred at all because he already grew up with this. It's not a problem. He'll go to the 100, you know, the next 1,000 people and putting on stone. Fine. End of story. A few years ahead, Gil Locks, the person writing the story, sees the same old man, and he sees him in the shul wearing tefillin and davening. So he goes over to him and he says, I remember you. You're the one that a young Chabad boy tried to put on tefillin. You remember that? And you cursed him out, etc. What's going on? So this person turned to Gil Locks and told him, I got to tell you the truth. I don't know where that boy is today. But that boy, after he left, I actually went home, and I looked in the mirror, and I said to myself, what has gotten into me? I have a young boy coming over and asking me that what to put on tefillin, and all I do is I curse him out. I took on, from that day on, to put on tefillin, and I became religious again. Why is this the most amazing story? It's because this young boy was going to come up to Shemayim after 120 thinking that, Baruch Hashem, he did a lot of mitzvahs, did a lot of kiruv, I'm sure, but the last person he's going to expect to see is this guy, this old man, and if he does, he'll probably run away because he doesn't want to be cursed out again. And yet, it's the exact opposite. He's going to run after him, giving him a hug and showing him that all his mitzvahs and all his children and everyone else that he's now inspired is all in the schus of this guy who went over and got cursed and screamed at for trying to ask him if he wanted to put on stone. Okay, that's the most powerful story that I saw in that book. There's many other interesting stories, but that's the point. Okay, so I'm going to actually now put star 5 and unmute if anyone has any questions. And if not, then God willing, we will reconvene again, Bezrat Hashem. So 1 second. Okay. This is unmuted now. If anyone has any questions or specific requests or comments or things you want me to address in the future, it'll be my pleasure. I'm really just trying to help everyone feel that sense of confidence and security that everyone can and will, as others can, reach out. Okay, I'm not sure. I can't see anyone, but if anyone does have any questions and would rather email me, which normally happens, please do. I'm going to give you my email again. It's D as in Daniel, Koren is Coren at H.com. And God willing, if people are interested, we'll hopefully make this a part two to continue this journey. Okay, thank you so much, everyone.
Now, just before you end, first of all, I'd just like to say I've heard this class a few times, and every time it's powerful. It's great. You always come up with new stories. And I feel bad for the crowd that they couldn't hear the whole thing yet. So I'm hoping about this time, I think we should set the date now for June 16th, the same time, 9 to 10, mm-hmm. and it'll be the same phone number. I'll try sending out emails. I'd like to send out an email with the recording of tonight for anybody who wants to review. If anybody does have any questions, again, they can email Rav Daniel at dcoren@ish.com. If anybody wants a recording of this class, they can email conferencecalls@projectinspire.com. And I'm hoping everyone's going to come back again for the second class, and they can always tell others if they want about it, and so people could hear the rest of the steps. I think at the end of the two sessions or whatever it takes you, we should send out, I think, your notes on it, or I was writing notes now, and we'll send that out to whoever wants also, because I think it's a really great roadmap. People can pinpoint where they are and what they should be doing and what they feel comfortable about. So thank you very much, Daniel.
My pleasure, and atzlacha.
Okay, and I'm just going to review again one more point just as we leave. If people can take advantage of, you know, just a few days left, we're in Shlishi Magbala for the Blueprint campaign, which you could find out about on Kiruv.com. And also, e-groups are always inspiring. The stories that I see are inspiring, being a part of all the groups. And if anybody ever has a chance to email in their Kiruv activity or Kiruv questions, that's great. And also, every week we send out a newsletter trying to help and trying to educate and inspire everyone and give them the tools, whatever they might need for it to help them. So please take advantage of those opportunities. Thank you very much again, Rav Daniel, and I guess thank you very much for the crowd that we have. And again, I'm just reminding you, in 3 weeks, June 16th, we'll be having part two of this, the Kiruv of Steps. Thank you very much.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Have a great night, Rav Daniel.
Good night.